Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Basketball Addicts Podcast.
Yeah. And
today we have a good one, boys and girls. Today we are basically going to be having a really unique topic. You can't find this information or topic really anywhere else out there. So something that we see a lot and complain a lot is about coaching decisions. They shouldn't have fired Monty Williams, for example. Right? Mm-hmm. He does X, Y, Z, right? Like, and we're going to go ahead and give you guys a breakdown of every single team's head coach. We're going to give you the unfiltered opinion. And we're going to tell you and that compare that great coaching or poor coaching to the talent of the team. Because sometimes the talent of the team carries a poor coach to a good winning record and a good playoff record, right? And sometimes a great coach carries a terrible team to a really good regular season record and a good playoff record. It goes both ways. And sometimes the fan, you guys, sometimes it can be confusing. It'd be tough to tell the difference. And that's what we're here for. This is what we're going to be giving you guys today. Yeah. So you have anything to say before we start breaking these down?
No, let's get right into it, man.
All right. So we're going to start off in the East. The first team we're going to be breaking down is the Atlanta Hawks. Now, everything that we're breaking down today is 2K ratings. It's out of 100. Okay, so put that in perspective. So we rated Atlanta Hawks talent last year on their offense at a 90. And we rated their defensive talent at a 72. Now, Quinn Snyder wasn't able to coach a bunch of games. But from what we saw in Utah, gave his offense a 98 and his defense an 86. Yeah. So, you know, definitely last year, defensively, they're not as talented. Best player defensively, probably DeJounte Murray at this point in time. It's pretty weak and dim. But Quinn Snyder, when he was with Utah, he gets a 98 offensively because of what he did with Donovan Mitchell, the spacing, the three-point shooting. Even guys like Bogdan Bogdanović. Bogdan Bogdanović would have never hit that peak that he hit in Utah with anybody else.
Yeah.
The way he was able to use any offensive talent, the three-point shooting, the identity, the spacing, the development of Donovan Mitchell, all masterclass. And he does get a 86 for defense because he built a system around Rudy Gobert. I mean, that team had Joe Ingles to defend. They had, you know, Bogdan Bogdanović to defend. They had really terrible defenders, most positions, except Rudy. So the whole scheme was to push it towards Rudy and push everything towards drop coverage. And that was Quinn Snyder's brilliance, too, you know, of like, okay, we're going to try to hide our falls by pushing everything to Rudy, even though it can be exposed in the playoffs. Not his fault the talent didn't match up. But, yeah, that's the first one. So what do you think about that, Chris, the first one right off the bat?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I love Quinn Snyder, especially I love him in Utah. What he was able to do offensively with that team. I mean, even though you kind of had, like, a guy who could only defend, like, that was his only strong suit, you still was able to maximize the guys there, especially, like, I think Joe Ingles was, like, the best, like, spot-up shooter in Utah than he was anywhere else. Really good there. Bogdan Bogdanović. And then you also had Donovan Mitchell, who was, like, killing it. But the thing is, they just couldn't, you know, get out of the West. So they had the talent, I think, to an extent, but they just couldn't get out of the West. It was too many superpower teams, so we can't fault them for that. So offensively, I definitely agree with. And 86, I mean, you have guys on there who have slow feet, who can't really move well, who can't defend, like Joe Ingles, Bogdan Bogdanovic. You even got Donovan Mitchell to kind of buy into defending, at least, you know what I mean, playing both sides of the ball, not just, you know, trying to score all the time. And then you have Rudy Gobert, who can't do anything else but, you know, who can barely, like, he's not even a great defender, but he was still able to maximize that as well. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, he's definitely a great interior defender, that's for sure.
Yeah. He defends very well. I mean, he defends good enough. Yeah. So, actually, very well. Okay. Give him that, very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you just, you have like your scheme where you push everything toward him and it kind of works. And he has to, and that's the kind of player that Rudy Gobert is, because he has to like kind of, he has to be in a system that does that. Otherwise, he's kind of useless.
That's true. Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah.
Alrighty. You ready to get to the next one?
Let's rock it.
This is going to be a big one. This is going to be a really big talking point. Next, we're going to talk about the Boston Celtics. The team talent for the Boston Celtics for last year. We rated a 99 on 2K for offense and 100 for defense. And we gave Joe Mazzulla, the head coach of the Boston Celtics, a 65 for offense and a 75 for defense. So it's very clear that the Boston Celtics' offensive talent is so special. Last year, Mark Smart, Malcolm Brogdon, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Then we got, you know, Marcus Smart, Derek White, Al Horford spacing wise. They had a lot of offensive talent. And then when you go to the defense side, Robert Williams, Al Horford, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart. Just probably the most defensively talented team last year was the Boston Celtics. Okay. So when we go to Joe Mazzulla, why does he get a 65 for offense? Well, because a lot of the things that Ime made work the year before, Joe didn't do. Very simple explanation is passing, right? The ball moved so much better with Boston. And it's so important for the ball to move well and for like people to play together and have off-ball movement. It's because it takes attention away from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. It gives them another like a change up, an ability to hit those bounce passes and to be able to hit their teammates in stride. And it was a much more passing and movement based offense last year. And then on top of that, it's the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown situation that this guy, Joe Mazzulla, couldn't do. Right. And he was very reliant on the talent to get them as far as they did. They relied on talent of their scoring and 3-point shooting. And it was extremely stagnant. I don't think I've seen a team in the past 4 years make it to the Eastern, make it to a conference finals and be more stagnant than they were. I mean, it was they're staying in one spot. Al Horford doesn't move. Right. The 3-point shooters, whenever they're off ball, they don't move. Right. It's a very stagnant, predictable offense. And Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum attack you from similar areas. Everything's from the wing. Right. Everything's from the wing or the baseline. And last year, Ime Udoka did a really great job of Jaylen Brown's mostly going to attack from the top of the key. And Jason Tatum's going to talk from the wing. And we're going to give two different dimensions. And it allowed to give those two the spacing because they do have extremely similar skill. You do have to be creative to make both of them work. And Joe Mazzulla just didn't seem like he could figure that out. And, you know, Jaylen Brown's talent offensively suffered points per game in the playoffs because Joe Mazzulla couldn't figure it out. And they were just so predictable. And defensively, he does get a 75 because at least they compete. It's not like he's throwing out advanced schemes. It's not like they're throwing out zones. It's not like they're, you know, having these creative, we got to shut down matchups. It's just like Joe Mazzulla can get them to a level of being able to compete and try hard on defense. But it's not like he's a strategic mind that's giving them the edge in a defensive matchup. You know what I mean? So that the greatness of their team defensively last year was due to talent. So, Chris, what do you think of that?
Oh, yeah. That's another one I agree with, too. That's not one too far-fetched. I believe that the Boston Celtics were a way better team, and I'm pretty sure everybody out there agrees as well, under Ime Udoka. And I believe that with his departure from the Boston Celtics, I would say that Joe Mazzulla just kind of inherited a team that was already pretty much set to win, so they couldn't do anything but win. So we really didn't quite see like if there was any differences in like scheme or anything like that, because this is the same team that Ime Udoka was able to coach into, okay, now we got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown defending at a high level. You know what I mean? We got them wanting to play at a certain level, but, you know, and playing winning basketball finally. We finally seeing, like, a young team really rising through the ranks in the East and really becoming something. Like, they got really close, you know what I mean? I think the year prior to they got really close. They lost in the finals. So it's like they were it was just a better scheme, a better team under Ime, and Joe Mazzulla just kind of inherited. So I feel like he kind of didn't get a chance to, or maybe he did, you know, in a way to like really kind of see if there was any creativity, because he kind of was just playing off of what was already there. Trying to build upon it, but it was, in my opinion, it was pretty much perfect. So I think that, you know, I think that creativity wise, because we probably didn't get a chance to see enough, and we've seen a lot of like switching back to like the original, like how he couldn't figure out how to place Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to kind of get him to work correctly. I would give him like, you know, low points for the creativity. Defensively, he was able to get him to compete, but they were already pretty much set defensively because they already knew their sets from the year prior. They already knew the offensive sets from the year prior. So it's not really much coaching that needed to be done besides like maybe a little bit of, how would I say, motivation, really. That might have been the biggest problem this year. But other than that, yeah, I agree, though.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, the next team we're going to go ahead and kick it to is the Brooklyn Nets. So for last year, obviously this is after the KD trade. Last year, offensively, we have them rated as a 77, talent-wise. Defensively, we have them rated as an 84, Nick Claxton, Mikal Bridges. And make it really respectable. It's hard not to have a good defense when you have those two. So, and then Jock Vaughn, the head coach, offensively last year I gave him 87, and defensively I gave him 84. So Jock Vaughn really impressed me a lot last year offensively. The way that he was able to, after that trade for Mikal Bridges, and they got Cam Johnson, the way that he used Mikal Bridges. And because when you look at that roster, there wasn't a better, more veteran scorer on the team than Mikal, right? And the ways that he was able to use him and to get the most out of him in the high volume scoring role as the number one, because he was the number one talent, was so impressive. It was really impressive, and it also led to winning. And we saw Cam Thomas really become his best. And if you watch a Nets game, there's movement, right? There's three-point shooting, there's spacing, there's cuts, there's passing. It's a very team oriented scheme that doesn't neglect the basics, right? They do a really good job. Everybody's involved. It's just it's a very impressive year from him. And defensively, he uses Nick Claxton extremely well. He doesn't force him to do something stupid like drop coverage, switchable scheme. You know what I mean? He definitely has gotten the most out of him. And, you know, I just really feel like he understands switching and he understands his identity and he gets everybody to play defense. And I feel like Jock Vaughn had a really good year. So I really was impressed. So what do you think about that ratings for the Brooklyn Nets?
Yeah. Considering he lost, you know, KD, you know what I mean, to the Suns, and kind of got and kind of inherited a younger team.
Yeah.
The fact that he was able to maximize Cam Thomas. I mean, Cam Thomas had a streak there going where he was dropping 40 points every night.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I think it was like a whole, like maybe three or four games that he was just continuously doing that. And I think that that's just amazing in itself to, you know, take such a young talent like that, you know, kind of a raw talent, and be able to, you know, encourage him enough to take those shots, to score a lot, to try to put the team on his back, and then get a player like Mikal Bridges from the Suns, who, you know, was a great player there as well. You know, he helped, you know, so I would say, though, he just being able to incorporate those kind of players there, you know, that I will give him definitely high marks in the offensive side. And Nick Claxton is a big upside, you know, especially because he's one of those athletic kind of guys who can defend really well. So it's good that he was able to once again maximize the talent there. So yeah, this was a very impressive season. At first, I was thinking to myself, like, you know, I don't really know about this guy coaching wise. But then when I start seeing like how, you know, Cam Thomas was able to really like show us and kind of shut a lot of our mouths about the team. So I was like, okay, this impressive. Might be interesting. It was definitely impressive. Definitely impressive.
All right. You ready to kick it to the next team?
Let's go.
All right. Next team up is the Charlotte Hornets. This is assuming LaMelo Ball is healthy. I gave their offense a 75 talent-wise, and I gave their defense a 68. Head coaching-wise, Steve Clifford, I gave their offensive schemes a 70. His defensive scheming a 68. You know, this is a really young team. You don't really get to see a lot of the young players play because Steve Clifford's a dumbass. He doesn't allow the young players to play. That wasn't in the 2K ratings, or he have zeros for coaching. Anybody that his minutes are terrible. But you know, when we talk about talent, LaMelo Ball is very talented offensively. Gordon Hayward is a good talent. Terry Rozier is a good talent. Most of the other guys are extremely raw, right? So it's hard to give them a really high rating. And defensively, they don't really have anybody. They don't have anybody that defends except the center position, Mark Williams, right? It's not a lot of defensive talent. Steve Clifford, though, does get a 70 offensively. There's nothing special that he does. I feel like the biggest thing that upsets me is I feel like he wants to force LaMelo to play too much in the half court. I feel like letting him push the pace more is just such an easy thing to do, right? It makes too much sense. You know what I mean? And like, for example, in the 70s, when Pat Riley took over the Los Angeles Lakers, believe it or not, Magic Johnson was playing a slow pace. Right before the Pat Riley took over, and then he was like, why would I not use Magic Johnson to play up and down, right? And I feel like it's so obvious, but Steve Clifford hasn't made that adjustment. So he gets a 70. He gets a 68 defensively. He doesn't really get anybody to try. I don't see the Hornets putting in all this effort defensively, you know what I mean? So that's why he doesn't get a lot of respect from me on that side of the basketball. It's not like he's doing anything special, but he also doesn't have a lot of talent. But again, they're not trying anything. They don't really put a ton of effort into it. So he gets a 68 for me. So what are you thinking about that, Chris?
Yeah, that's not. I agree with that one too. On the offensive side of things, I think that you're absolutely right. I think that having a LaMelo Ball playing the half court does not make any sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of guy you want pushing the pace. All the other coaches he's ever had has figured that out, except for this guy for some reason. Steve Clifford has not seemed to figure out that he is better in transition up and down the floor where he can really utilize his passing skills and really put on a show and really get everybody involved. He's that kind of player. He's more of a up and down kind of player. Like you can really like put the ball in his hand. He'll see the floor. He'll make some great passes. You know what I mean? And really start getting your offense flowing in a very productive way. Defensively, like you said, it's nothing to bat an eye at because he doesn't have anybody defensively and he hasn't tried anything. There's no defensive sets. I mean, you don't really see a lot of amazing stops. Like, ooh, wow, you're like, you know, this guy is a great defender. Like, no, not really. It's not getting anybody to try, really. So I'll give him low marks for that. So I agree with that one. I think it was a 68. Okay. But offensively, if he could just figure out that, hey, LaMelo Ball is better up and down, or maybe if they just have to get another coach in there, then that guy figures it out, whatever it may be. When that happens, then the Charlotte Hornets will truly take off offensively.
Yeah. Sadly, there's a section of NBA coaches that only believe in one scheme.
Yeah.
And they will forever always coach one scheme and not adaptable. So he seems like one of those guys. Alrighty. You ready to kick it to the next team?
Let's go.
All right. This is another really good example of this. The Chicago Bulls. Team talent-wise last year, I got them 87 offensively. You got Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic, who, you know, still can drop 16, 18 any night, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty solid team. And defensively, I gave their talent a 78, right? They still had Alex Caruso last year. They had Pat Bev after deadline. And Patrick Williams is a really solid wing defender, right? And when Lonzo Ball does come back, that'll side of the ball will be more talented too. So Billy Donovan, head coach-wise, I give his offense a 74, and I give his defense a 71. So I'm giving that offense a 74 because of that man hasn't been able to figure out DeMar DeRozan paired with Zach LaVine since he got there. I'm so surprised that this man still has a job. He forces Zach LaVine to run the DeMar DeRozan sets. That mid-range stuff, the mid-range ISO coming off ball screens. It's just it's in an abuse of power. It's just so terrible. It makes zero sense to force Zach LaVine to do those type of things. It's also not surprising that a college coach using a two guard to come off ball screens in the mid-range, because that's what college offensive systems have been doing for the past 35 years. Mm-hmm. And Billy Donovan is a college coach. He's from Florida, won 2 national championships, beat Ohio State Buckeyes once. And, you know, defensively, I feel like their defensive ability is carried about by the talent. I don't see any unique schemes. I see Nikola Vucevic being not really understanding what he's supposed to be doing. And on top of everything else, this is a real issue. Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan are really gifted athletically, right? Billy Donovan was a good defensive coach, Zach LaVine wouldn't suck at defense, okay? And my clear example of this is Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins coming out of college, people were like, oh, we did these advanced science tests, and this Andrew Wiggins came up with a record high score for reaction time. He might be the next Michael Jordan defensively. And then he goes to Minnesota, and he's like, that guy sucks defensively. And then he goes to Golden State, and then he becomes Andrew Wiggins defensively. Like, Zach LaVine's that type of guy. DeMar DeRozan's that kind of guy. But especially Zach LaVine, where he's ridiculously gifted athletically, but a coach that's not good defensively is not going to get the most out of him. And that's a good example of it. So because of all those reasons, I'm lowing him defensively as well. So what do you think about that, Chris?
Yeah. The Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan thing really does baffle me. Because you have one of the best, you know, kind of shot creators from three. You know what I mean? Like, he was doing amazing things in Minnesota, you know what I mean, from the 3-point line, you know, and like just shot creating in a sense and just coming downhill. And you have him running mid range. You're not even playing to his strengths.
No, not at all.
DeMar DeRozan is the mid range assassin. He's the Jimmy Butler. You wouldn't make Jimmy Butler shoot threes. You know what I mean? You don't make Zach LaVine shoot mid-range shots. It's just that simple. Like, you understand what the talent is and what the personnel can do, and you know, and what the players are capable of, and that's how you know you're a good coach. That's why I agree with the low rating for offense, because he doesn't understand his personnel clearly, because he doesn't seem to understand that DeMar DeRozan shoot mid-range shots, Zach LaVine shoots threes. That's how it goes. You don't put Zach LaVine in the same sets as you would DeMar DeRozan, because it just doesn't work. He doesn't shoot that close. He shoots from further away. He's a long-range assassin. So defensively, he does have some defensive talent there. I will say that the Pat Bev, Alex Caruso combination, I like that, you know.
No.
I can agree with the low marks, because it's nothing too fancy, but he does have the talent. And Patrick Williams as well. He does have the talent for it to be a great defensive scheme, as well as he has the talent for it to be a great offensive scheme as well. It's just kind of just how he's able to put it together.
Yeah. I mean, the Chicago Bulls for the last 3 years have had a team that's the talent to be a 6 seed in the East. Easy. Mm-hmm. It's so easy, but they've never reached it. Why? Coaching, right? Coaching. But because of the talent on the team, they get to the play-in, and people are like, oh, that's the Bulls. They're a pretty solid team, right? Billy Donovan's not that bad. Well, no. You have DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, and DeMar DeRozan. Before DeMar got to Chicago, Zach LaVine was dropping 26, 27 a game, right? Mm-hmm. So let's not act like there's some talent there. Okay. Alrighty. You ready to kick it to the next team?
Let's go.
All right, and this is something that we're both so excited to talk about. The Cleveland Cavaliers, boys and girls. Mm-hmm. Last year, I gave their offensive talent a 93, and I gave their defensive talent a 94. And I also gave the offensive coaching of J.B. Bickerstaff a 97. I gave the defensive coaching of J.B. Bickerstaff a 100. That man can coach. All right. Yeah. So we talk about Cleveland Cavaliers team talent offensively. We got Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Caris LeVert, Evan Mobley, shooters on the wing. That team has a lot of offense talent. Defensively, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, you know, Donovan Mitchell's improved defensively. Lamar Stevens was a really good defender that they traded the Miami Heat. They had talent, right? And they really did, but they reached a higher point than they would have because of the coaching of J.B. Bickerstaff. J.B. Bickerstaff gets a 97 for me offensively. I mean, that guy was able to make two high-volume ball-handling guards work together, and he made it look easy. He really made it look easy how well he fit Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell together, and it's a real tough issue because Donovan Mitchell isn't some normal scoring guard. Like he might be the best two-guard passer in the NBA, maybe behind James Harden, top three two-guard passer in the NBA, a point guard level passer. Like he's legitimately great, right? So that's part of his greatness, and to allow him to be at his greatest self, you got to have him as a passer too. And that would have, in theory, gotten in the way of Darius Garland, but he made it work so well. The spacing, the way that they ran pick and rolls, the way they ran actions, and it's just so impressive. Everybody was used 100% well. And he gets 100 for defensively because Caris LeVert never defended a day in his life before J.B. Bickerstaff was coaching him. We watched Caris LeVert, like, whoa, Caris LeVert can defend. Now, Donovan Mitchell, this is the best defender we've ever seen from him. Evan Mobley's, you know, taking ginormous steps forward. We get to see Darius Garland be the defensive defender he can be. Schematically, they're always great. They force everything to the rim. They defend the rim so special, right? They play to their strengths, which is length. It's beautiful. It's beautiful what J.B. Bickerstaff did last year. The Cavs shouldn't touch him. He should be at least have the head coaching job for the next 5 years, at least. Special. So what do you think about that, Chris? I know you're happy to talk about it.
Oh, of course. Offensively, I love it. Darius Garland, you know what I mean? He has big games. Darius being used beautifully. Donovan Mitchell, you're able to play Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, two high-volume guys on the court at the exact same time who kind of create from the same areas. It works so well.
Yes.
And then you absolutely hit the nail on the head when you said that Donovan Mitchell, you're able to get the best out of him because, you know, he's a downhill kind of shot creating kind of guy who can also pass very well. He's like one of the best two card passers. So it also gets everybody else involved because he passes better. Darius Garland is a great passer as well. And then you're look at where Mobley was to where Mobley is now. I mean, if that's not coaching, I don't know what is. You have Caris LeVert, who is very consistently inconsistent, but you were able to sort of maximize him when he gives you what he can give you. Like he's a solid 10 to 15 points, and that's good enough, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and defensively, like you said, he has Evan Mobley who can defend. You know, Donovan Mitchell is really bought into the defensive scheme of things.
Yes.
I mean, Jared Allen and Caris LeVert as well. Like, you know, nobody could get Caris LeVert to defend. He was just like, okay, I'm going to score on this side of the ball, and we're going to leave everything else on the other side. And he's actually been defending pretty well, and you can get some quality points out of him too. So I definitely agree with the 2K rating here.
Yeah, it was no mistake that the Cleveland Cavaliers had a number one rated defense in the regular season for like ever. Like that was not a mistake. It's J.B. Bickerstaff being a phenomenal coach. I'm so glad he's in Cleveland. Yeah, we got a good one. We got lucky. Could you imagine if he was coaching with LeBron? I'm just going to say that really quickly. We can't talk about it too long, but that man would have been the best coach LeBron's ever had. I'm just going to say now. Eric Spoelstra was really young when he started coaching. I'm not Spo. Yeah, him.
Yeah.
Man. All right, you ready to kick it to the next team?
Let's go.
All right, we're going to talk about the Dallas Mavericks here. Team talent-wise, offensively, they had 95 last year. Defensively, they had a 60. That's by 2K rating for their defense. That's post-Dorian Finney-Smith trade. Okay, he wasn't on the team. And then Jason Kidd. I give him offensively 100 and defensively an 85. All right, boys and girls. You know, people are prisoners of the moment. 2 years ago, the Dallas Mavericks were in the Western Conference Finals. So let's not act like, you know, this team isn't. This is crazy. So basically, why I mean, obviously, offensively, talent-wise, Luka, Kyrie, the spacing, the three-point shooting, the small ball, and the depth of guys like Tim Hardaway that they bring off the bench, 95 makes sense. Defensively, they sucked. They didn't have anybody that could defend. Their best defender might have been JaVale McGee? JaVale McGee, and I can't think of another guy that's an average defender on the list, right? So it was really rough, talent-wise. But, you know, reason why Jason Kidd gets 100 offensively is Luka. Like, the way he uses Luka was just so special. The pick and rolls, and he basically used Luka the way that he's never been used before, which is the post, right? The mid-post action where Luka would catch the ball and he'd get the shot off or maybe get a fadeaway or get a pass and he'd look for double teams. And it was a really great use of Luka. And it was a really great maximization of Luka. And it was so impressive. And even though, you know, people may not have talked about it a lot, the fact that he made Kyrie and Luka work together, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he made those two work together offensively and schematically, and he's such a, you know, genius of taking advantage of defenses. You remember when he made Rudy Gobert unplayable, and that's how they moved on in the playoffs, right? You know what I mean? Like, he is a strategic genius, right? He is an X's and O's strategic genius. He really is. It's special. He's a special offensive mind, Jason Kidd. And he gets an 85 for defense because when Dorian Finney-Smith was there, they were pretty respectable. They had guys that could guard players, and they were trying the best to hide Luka. But even guys like Luka tried their best, right? Everybody on Dallas always tries their best defensively. You know what I mean? So I definitely feel like in X's and O's and trying to take away matchups and doubling players, Jason Kidd does make other teams think, right, defensively when they're on the floor. They may have always had the talent, but, you know, Jason Kidd's a phenomenal coach, and they just didn't have the defensive talent last year. So what do you think about that, Chris?
Oh, yeah. So the Dallas Mavericks have way better offensive talent than they've had when it was just, like, I think they had, like, a Yogi Ferrell at one point, and then they had Jalen Brunson. I mean, Jalen Brunson is decent offensively. Yeah. You know, he's really good. Yeah. But, like, the whole Kyrie, Luka Doncic, like, makes them, like, a monster offensively.
Yes.
And to be able to make that work, that's, like, magic. You know, it's one of those things where it's, like, this doesn't work. But then you understand that Luka is a great passer, and he can also score. So he's really able to get people involved. And it works really well because then you just kind of just figure out, you know, who's taking the shot. You can pass it to Kyrie. Kyrie can knock it down, or he can take it to the hole. Yeah. He really, like, is able to really keep the ball in his hand. And
true.
It's, the offense works with those two when they have a good coach.
Yeah.
Defensively, like you said, when they had Dorian Finney-Smith, everybody was really trying on defense and was able to keep things together defensively. Now, I would say that Kyrie doesn't really defend. Luka defends a little bit. So, I mean, I can understand the 60 because, like, you don't really have anybody who's defending. But nope. Luka tries. I would give him that. You know, if he can get Kyrie to try defensively, which, I mean, like, he's really late in his career, so I don't think things going to change because no other coaches got to try really defensively.
Yeah.
I think that the 60 stays, unless they probably just need some quality role players. I mean, Christian Wood also adds to their offensive value as well. Yeah. So I didn't forget about that for a second. So
they got the most out of Christian Wood too. That's a good example.
They did. What is he? 20-10
He was like a 20. Yeah, that was crazy. He definitely wasn't doing that. He was basically coming off the bench at Houston. Like, that was
incredible.
Yeah, the way he used. That's another example of Jason Kidd's offensive genius, boys and girls. I really believe in it. All right, you ready to kick it to the next stand?
Let's rock it.
Another team that Chris is going to be extremely happy to talk about is the Denver Nuggets. So last year, offensively, I gave them talent-wise a 100. Defensively, I gave them talent of 94. Micah Malone, I gave him offensively a 95 and defensively a 95. You know, this team won the NBA championship. Offensive talent has to be at 100 when you got Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic playing like Nikola Jokic did in the NBA Finals in the playoffs. So ridiculously spectacular, and the spacing, the shooting. It was really great to see. Defensively, they do have guys like Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, you know, KCP,
and other guys off the bench. I can't think off the top of my head, but they had some pretty solid defensive talent. And Micah Malone isn't a all-time great coach, and he's going to be hundreds and something, but he's very, very, very good. He has a great scheme around Nikola Jokic. He uses his passing to the upteenth degree. They have a lot of cutting and movement. They really use KCP and the off-ball screens, and they have another guy off the bench that I can't think of right now that they drafted from Kansas who also comes off-ball screens. And they really do a great job of just movement.
Bruce Brown, right?
Yeah, no, it's somebody else. I can't think of his name. Christian Braun.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so they really use everybody extremely well. Jamal Murray, even guys like Deshaun Bones Highland and Will Barton. This guy has a really good history of using these guys extremely well. And defensively, scheme-wise, he does understand matchups well, right? He's not going to put Michael Porter Jr. on LeBron. He's going to put Aaron Gordon on LeBron, right? He understands matchups. He understands schemes. He understands how to try to take away what the opponent is doing. He's a smart, good coach. Like, this guy is very good. I have a lot of respect for Michael Malone. So I'm thinking that there. So what do you think about that, Chris?
Yeah, I think that he did a great job of maximizing the talent that he had on the team. Yeah. I mean, you already have Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, and that has gotten you pretty far, you know what I mean, before. But to be able to maximize the role players very well, you know, such as like the Aaron Gordon, who I think he was like, he became like a spot-up shooter, kind of a lob threat type of guy, and he was like thriving in that role.
Yeah.
You also have Bruce Brown from the Clippers. He, you know, defensively, the 3-and-D kind of guy, he was really like, really truly asset to them winning the championship and a big reason why they won the championship. And then to also take a rookie, he literally was a rookie, Christian Braun, and maximize him to help them lead them to a championship. I mean, he was another asset in their championship run, so especially in the finals. So it was crazy. So I will give that to him offensively and defensively, because he just maximizes the talent that he had defensively as well. Everybody was really like, you know, really feeding into the defensive schemes. Like, okay, we can win this. You know, he was able to motivate these guys to defend, because defense is mostly motivation. And especially when you have some athletic guys like Aaron Gordon, then you can get the most out of them defensively as well.
Yeah.
So I agree. 95-95, and the team was just great this year. Go Nuggets.
Yeah. Alrighty. You ready to kick it to the next team? All right, from one team to another team that has a head coach we're going to want to talk about. So we're going to talk about the Detroit Pistons next. So the Detroit Pistons had, I would give them a 76 talent-wise last year offensively and a 68 talent-wise defensively. They don't really have much good guys that can really defend very well. They have some guys like Jalen Duran, who has some athletic gifts, but you know, most of the talent's on the offensive end with Cade and Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duran and Bogdan Bogdanovic. And their new head coach, because I didn't want to do Dwayne Casey because it makes no sense to do it. New head coach is Monty Williams. Monty Williams, we're going to give a 98 to offense and defense. Monty Williams is a guy that is a classic example of this point of this podcast, right? Monty Williams is a guy that took the Suns from basically nothing, right, and made them into an NBA championship contender. And he always maximized the team. Everybody was always playing extremely well. They had a scheme and the three-point shooting and the way they used Chris Paul and the way they had Chris Paul gel DeAndre Ayton. But specifically, last year, the genius that Monty Williams did is he got Devin Booker and KD to work together within like seven days. Within a week, and had a whole new system, because Kevin Durant, that system they ran with Kevin Durant is completely different than the system they had with Jay Crowder and Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. Completely different. Mikal Bridges, Monty Williams did that in a week or two and had an advanced system where they're passing and the movement. And it was extremely special. I mean, the Clippers haven't been able to figure that out for 3 years, and Monty Williams did it in 2 weeks. Like, that's why he's going to be a 98 offensively. And defensively, I mean, he gets most of his players. He gets everybody to defend. Everybody's switchable other than DeAndre Ayton and drop coverage, the way he would use Jay Crowder, the way he got the most out of Mikal Bridges. You know, this guy is a phenomenal coach. He even gets the most out of Devin Booker defensively. This guy is special. Monty Williams has really fooled people to thinking that what the Suns were before Kevin Durant was a better team than what the talent used to be. So this is a great example of this podcast. What do you think about that, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Monty Williams is definitely a great example of what this podcast is about, because this specific episode, because like he really, really was able to maximize all of the guys. Yeah. To think about the fact that DeAndre Ayton is going to look totally different next year. Yeah. Think about this. Without Chris Paul, Chris Paul was able to, he was able to get Chris Paul involved, yeah, make him a decent focal point of the offense as well, because he's pushing the ball. And then for him to be able to work alongside DeAndre Ayton, you know what I mean, with that pick and roll that they were able to set up so that DeAndre Ayton looks like a way better player than what he truly is.
Yes.
And then you also get Kevin Durant with like a couple games left, you know what I mean, and you somehow get it to work to the point where you almost make it to the Western Conference Finals, and then your team gives up on you. I don't see how that happens. Offensively, what can you say? This is the same coach that the Suns had, and they, you know, were in the bubble, and Booker put on that great performance in the play-in, and then they didn't make the playoffs, and we're like, what the heck? Like, they went undefeated in the bubble, pretty much, and like didn't make the playoffs, and it was something crazy like that. This is that coach that was able to maximize Booker. We've been seeing Booker just be like the scoring threat forever, but to be as much of an assassin as he was at that point, and then from then on, I mean, that's nothing but coaching. And then you adding KD into that, you adding Jay Crowder. I mean, Jay Crowder before KD came, and Cam Johnson, getting Cam Johnson to get the most out of him. Cameron Payne, to get the most out of Cameron Payne.
Yeah, you know, that's like, right. They revived his career.
I forgot about that. Getting the most out of Cameron Payne to the point where he feels like he can talk to LeBron because he's because their team has beaten him and he's dropped big points against him. Like to do be able to do something like that, coaching offensively is phenomenal. Yeah. Then defensively, like you had, you know, to get everybody to really buy into the defensive scheme, huge, huge. So I definitely agree.
Okay, you ready to kick it to the next guy?
Let's go.
All right. Next team up, we have the Golden State Warriors. Last year, offensive talent wise, I gave them a 98. Jordan Poole plus the Warriors system, it's really special. Last year, defensively, I gave them a 95. Some guys are starting to slow down just a smidge. Steph is slowing down just a smidge. Clay, Draymond. But the reason why they're 95 and not 100 is because of Kevon Looney. He's a real weakness defending the rim. So it's a real issue strategically, so they didn't get 100. But the Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr, I gave him offense 100 and defense 100. This guy's been a genius for a very long time. Phenomenal use of all his players, great teams, great systems. Offensively, gets off-ball movement, gets the move with Clay and Steph and the way they do everything. This is a guy that's in the Mount Rushmore of coaching. Right, and it's done so many special things for so long. Not having him hundreds of both is kind of unreasonable. So what do you think about the Golden State Warriors here?
Oh, yeah. Golden State Warriors is very easy. Kerr is, like, phenomenal. We've seen what he was able to do creating this game where Curry was used in such a way where he was always off ball and kind of just allowed Draymond to really kind of facilitate the offense, you know, through his passing ability, like to notice that Draymond has, you know, a gift for passing and to be able to really, you know, allow him to facilitate and get Curry, you know, really all these wide open looks. Like Curry wouldn't be, I mean, well, Curry is a phenomenal shooter, the greatest shooter of all time regardless, but Kerr and his offensive coaching, it had a big part in that as well, because I mean, how would he get the looks otherwise? I mean, to stare at a guy like Steph, who's, you know, shorter than everybody else, who plays with like a chip on his shoulder because he is, you know, is a little bit smaller, you know what I mean, to get him into like this thing, okay, look, I gotta run around 10 times and wait for the ball to come and then knock down the shot, and then also to get Clay to be able to be, I mean, like, Clay is already automatic, but to get Clay to buy into the offense as well as so many other people such as Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole, to come off the bench and be phenomenal and be a big reason why you won the championship 2 years ago, amazing. So, and then defensively, we already know what they're about defensively. I mean, you have Draymond, you have so many other guys who, you know, especially Wiggins, who are long, athletic, and can really defend the ball very well and play both sides of the ball. So hundreds across the board.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Chris. So the next team up is going to be the Houston Rockets. So last year, offensively, gave them a 78 offensively. Jalen Green, KCP, you know, Alperen Sengun, Eric Gordon, a lot of talent there. And then defensively, gave them a 71. You know, they do have some guys that have, like Jabari Smith Jr. He has high upside, but he hasn't quite reached it yet because he hasn't, you know, thinking right, his defensive mind and the X's and O's hasn't developed yet, but he does have talent. So 71 last year is pretty reasonable. They did have some decent length, but the star of the show here is Ime Udoka. We get to talk about Ime. Ime, man, I gave him 100 for offense and 100 for defense. I mean, this man made Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum work offensively. Like, give that man his credit, right? Brad Stevens, that same Brad Stevens that got the most out of Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford, that Brad Stevens couldn't make it work. Couldn't get Jason Tatum to Jaylen Brown work. And we just saw Joe Mazzulla, right, try to coach these two guys. And everybody's like, oh, we got to trade him. We got to trade him. Well, he got to the NBA Finals with them, and they didn't have any issues offensively. And it was because of passing and the way that he used and spaced Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and the way that they used them to attack the floor in different spaces. Right, and it was really special to watch. And he didn't even have Malcolm Brogdon on the team, right? That, think about that. If he would have had Malcolm Brogdon, they would have been back in the NBA Finals. I'm so sorry, Mike Heat, but you know what I mean. But this guy gets 100 offensively and defensively. Jason Tatum never defended a day before in his life, right? Before he walks in and he gets a scheme, and they're super switchable and they have an identity and they're just phenomenal. And every Marcus Smart is really great, and Derek White's really great. And this is if they just all defend at extremely high levels, they attack matchups. Ime Udoka was the reason why KD broke down in the Eastern Conference playoffs, because they were doubling him and forcing KD to become a playmaker. And, you know, that's part of the reason why they lost the series, and it was just high turnovers. And really, it was impressive what he did. He really broke him down. You know, he's a strategic mind. Ime Udoka legitimately is an every 5 years talent, a half generational coaching talent. That's what Ime is. It is special. And there has not been a better coach to enter the NBA in the last 5 years than Ime. I'm just going to say that. Yeah, so. All right, that's what I got to say about Ime and the Houston Rockets. What do you think?
Absolutely true. Ime Udoka is a generational talent coaching-wise. I mean, just what he was able to do. You mean you hit the nail
year
on the
one?
Head. Yeah, literally year one with Jason Tatum,
yes,
and Jaylen Brown. What he was able to do with that, and just something simple as, okay, we're just gonna have them on different sides. You know what I mean? Okay, he can have the wing, or he's gonna have the point, he's gonna have the top of the key, and we're gonna just make this work. And the fact that it worked and it turned into almost NBA championship in his first year with the Celtics, crazy. And then to get everybody to buy in defensively. I mean, Jason Tatum, like you said, never defended, you know, in his life. So yes, to get this guy to play high-level defense and to beat a team that was supposed to win it all and to sweep them at that.
Yeah.
And to force them to be broken up within the next year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yes.
It's crazy. So definitely agree with those numbers.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and kick it to the next team. Next team up is the Indiana Pacers. So last year, talents-wise, we give them an offensive talent of 77. You know, Tyrese Halliburton, Benedict Mathurin, Chris Duarte, Miles Turner spacing. They had some talent there. Defensive talent, I'd give it a 73. You know, Tyrese Halliburton can't defend. And neither can Benedict Mathurin yet, Chris Duarte yet, but you know, Miles Turner and Jalen Smith push the talent to this point, right? Because Miles Turner is a really special defender. You know, Rick Carlisle gets a 91 offensively for me. He used Tyrese Halliburton extremely well. He plays to the team's strengths. They shoot a ton of threes, but they have 3-point shooting talent. They don't have a ton of shot creation talent. Rick Carlisle really is a good offensive coach. This guy has been in the league for an extremely long time. And defensively, I'm going to give them an 86. I mean, this team definitely played better defense than the talent was on the floor last year. They always play together. They attack matchups. They understand the roles. They play tough. They play hard. They might not have the talent there, but they really do a really good job of coaching. Rick Carlisle, I mean, this guy's been coaching since forever. He coached, you know, the Meta World Peace Indiana Pacers teams. I mean, then obviously the Dallas Mavericks with Dirk Nowitzki. This guy has been a really phenomenal coach. Is he as good as he used to be? No, but he's definitely still very, very, very good. So, and yeah. What do you think about that, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's still a good coach. I think to be able to look at your personnel and decide, like, hey, this should be a three-point shooting team, if nothing else, and yeah. to start building a team around that, like getting pieces. I mean, like, I know he's not with the team anymore. Chris Duarte, Buddy Hield, you know, those are like three-point specialists there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have Miles Turner, who's a stretch big, who can knock down threes. Tyrese Halliburton looks like an all-star in this system. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's just nothing but attributed to the coaching that, you know, coaching in the system and, you know, ignoring the personnel. Defensively, I mean, yeah, I would say they can compete. They, you know, you still get the best out of everybody. Everybody plays together and is able to defend really well. I mean, you have long guys like Miles Turner. I mean, so I think it works.
Yeah. Alrighty. The next team on this list is somebody that we both really can't wait to talk about. Let's talk about those Los Angeles Clippers, Chris. All right, team talent wise, give them a 99 offensively, a 99 defensively. This team's super talented. They're the deepest team in the league last year. Covington, Kawhi. I don't know why I thought of Robert Covington before Kawhi Leonard. Let's go in order here. Kawhi, yeah. Paul George, Terrence Mann, Robert Covington, Norman Powell, Luke Kennard, Nashawn Bones Highland, Eric Gordon, Russell Westbrook, Marcus Morris, Ivica Zubac, Mason Plumlee, just so ridiculously deep. I'm probably still forgetting somebody because they're just that deep. It's insane. Offensive talent and defensive talent. And, you know, this is really where we're so excited to talk about this. Tyronn Lue gets a 60 offensively. And an 84 defensively. All right, let's talk about why Tyronn Lue gets a 60 offensively. Oh, maybe the fact that he's been coaching this team for the past 3 years, and he's never once figured out how to use Paul George and Kawhi Leonard at the same time. Oh, okay. And how about the fact that he's had his GM force point guards on him for the past 3 years on the roster, but he figures out new and creative ways to not use them. First things first, they traded Lou Williams in a second round draft pick for Rajon Rondo, who didn't touch the floor in the playoffs. All right, and then let's go to the next year. We got John Wall. You know, he basically doesn't really get to touch the floor much, and they're basically going to use Perry Jackson, what was his name? Reggie Jackson is the starting point guard.
Reggie Jackson, yeah.
Reggie Jackson starting over John Wall. And then they have Russell Westbrook, who they basically, while he's on the floor, touches the ball and initiates the offense about 20% of the time. Yeah, so the reason why that's a big issue is because the Clippers' weakness is passing, right? Kawhi Leonard is not a playmaker, but Tyronn Lue forces Kawhi Leonard to be a playmaker because Tyronn Lue doesn't understand offense, okay? He forces Paul George, who maybe is a third playmaker, fourth playmaker, sure. Is he above average passer for the small forward position? Yes, right? But he's not a high-volume playmaker. I want the ball in his hands 30% of the time when he's on the floor making decisions. And then I definitely don't want Kawhi Leonard, I can't pass, looking ass, initiating the offense 60% of the time when he has to play on the floor. There's a difference, boys and girls. And the reason why it's an issue is because when they had those terrible passes, everybody catches it below their knees. Everybody's catching it terribly. They can't hit backdoor cuts. You don't have to worry about anybody getting cut and having a tough pass getting made when Kawhi Leonard has the ball. It doesn't scare you because he's not going to make the pass, right? And it's just because defenses are so freaky long and athletic everywhere that if you don't have adequate passing, you're not going to win. I don't care how much talent you have. And Tyronn Lue doesn't understand that. And that's a real issue. And Russell Westbrook is a really good passer at this point in time in his career. Sure, younger OKC, no. But that man could have been the connecting piece to them going really far this year. But he wasn't able to be because Tyronn Lue didn't use him in the correct ways. And he forces Paul George to play like J.J. Redick when Kawhi Leonard is on the floor. Like, I don't need to see him do 20 off-ball screens, okay? Let's just try to get them running. And because the issue is they'll have Kawhi Leonard on one baseline and Paul George at the other, and they'll just be like, okay, you guys, one of you is going to be off-ball, and we're not going to scare you. They don't really have any unique actions. It's terrible. Now, defensively, Tyronn Lue is a pretty solid coach. He understands switching. They have an identity. They play tough. They put in effort. He understands matchups. Like, Tyronn Lue's a pretty solid defensive coach. Like, I give him respect defensively, but his offense sucks. So, they'll never go anywhere. So, what do you think about that, Chris?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Defensively, he's a solid coach. But offensively, the fact that he still hasn't figured out the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard tandem.
3 years!
3 years, it's crazy.
Yes.
I mean, just, it doesn't make sense. They both attack from the same place, you know what I mean, pretty decently. I mean, Kawhi Leonard does go into the post a bit more. Paul George is more of a cat. You can make him a catch and shoot, but he can also, you know, he also kind of goes in the post. They're both like kind of wing scorers. So, I mean, if you look around, if you just, you know, maybe look at the offense and see how you can make it work. Because they are definitely, the team is more talented than what they have shown.
Yeah.
Way more talented than what they have shown. On paper, these should have been champions a long time ago. This True. Clippers team should have won a championship a while ago. Huh. Quite honestly continued to elude them over and over again, season after season. And it's coaching, it's bad coaching.
Yes.
I know a lot of people aren't really big fans of Russ this late in his career. You know, they're like, oh, man, he was terrible with the Lakers, and he can't score like he used to. But where he really shines the most is his basketball IQ and his passing ability.
Yes.
That's exactly what they were missing. And yes. You hit the nail on the head when you mentioned Rajon Rondo. Like, the fact they had Rajon Rondo, who just won a championship the year before, you know, starting, and Frank Vogel figured that out, and he's not even an offensive guy.
No.
And that was just one thing that you wouldn't let happen. Like, the fact that Rajon Rondo did not touch the floor. Literally did not touch the floor. And he was your IQ Rajon guy. Rondo. Playoff Rajon Rondo did not touch the floor, and he was your IQ guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he was the guy who was going to, he's not going to score a lot, but he can definitely playmake for you at a high level and really get players involved and take some of that mental strain off Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I mean, same thing with Russell Westbrook. He may not be as athletic anymore, but if you put the ball in his hands and let him initiate the offense like you would, like a Chris Paul-esque player, let him just shine through his passing, then we can see a different Clippers team. It really is, they're only a guard away. Not even a guard away. An offensive
They have the guard away. Yeah, they have the guard. They've been had the guard.
Yeah, they have the guard. They've been had the guard. They're an offensive scheme away from winning a championship at this point. Because they just have so much talent. They're so deep. They can throw so many different sets at you. We've seen that. Fine, we get it. But the big problem is that you have Kawhi Leonard playing chess, and he's not that type of player.
No.
You make Russ play chess for you, and you make Kawhi the knight, Kawhi the king. You know what I mean? Let him move around the board however he wants to. Make Paul George the king. Let them move around the board however they want to, because they can do so much for you offensively.
Yes.
And defensively as well.
Yeah. And this is why the Clippers have never reached what they should. And this is a great example of this podcast. All right. You ready to kick it to the next team?
Yeah.
All right, from one Los Angeles team to another, we're going to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Last year, we would give their offensive talent 97, defensive talent 96. I mean, this team had good talent, the guard position, stuff like that. Darvin Ham-wise, I'd give him offensive rating a 91 and a defensive 77. So, you know, the reason why Darvin Ham gets a 91 offensively, in the playoffs, he did a really good job of LeBron's not producing as much, let's adapt and have these guards to have more high-volume roles. And we'll get the most out of Rui Hachimura. We'll get the most out of
Austin Reaves. We'll get the most out of D'Lo. We'll get the most out of Dennis Schroeder. We'll get the most out of Lonnie Walker. Like, he really did a really good job offensively. Yeah, and AD, the way he was used offensively as well, it was really impressive how well they were able to hide LeBron not just being able to score as much in the playoffs. It was really great. Darvin Ham gets a ton of respect for me, what he's done offensively. Defensively, though, the reason why he gets a 77 was because Anthony Davis was in freaking drop coverage for the whole year and against the Denver Nuggets. That man is a freak of nature, should be always switching because he's able to guard 1-5. But if you don't use him like that, then you're not going to get the most out of Anthony Davis. And it's just such a ridiculous, obvious answer. Like, it's so obvious to have Anthony Davis being in a switching system as a center that putting him in drop coverage makes me question your sanity. But you know, he gets a 77 because they was coached well, right? They defended well. They understand how to run drop coverage well. They use Jaren Vanderbilt well. So it's not like he can't coach the drop scheme. It's just that the drop scheme didn't fit the talent. So, you know, he's from Milwaukee, and that's why he runs that. So that's what I think about that. Chris, what do you think about the Lakers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like the Lakers. I like offensively. Definitely what they were able to do with Austin Reaves. Austin Reaves definitely had a coming out year last year, for sure. Yeah. And then, you know, LeBron, so you can't really say too much about that.
True. But
D'Lo had, I saw something today. Austin Reaves had the highest true shooting percentage last year, 68.9%.
Interesting. Okay.
Right? Yeah. Out of all of the guards in the NBA.
Interesting.
And D'Lo had a great shooting year as well.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, Darvin Ham is that guy. Coaching wise, defensively, I will say that he knows how to use Anthony Davis to an extent, because I believe in the beginning of the playoffs, Anthony Davis was averaging like 3 blocks a game crazy like that. Like, he was going bananas defensively. Yeah. But I think that just being able to make those defensive adjustments, I think I can understand why we would give them a 77, because he wasn't able to adjust against like Nikola Jokic and, you know, kind of later on in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's one time where you should probably bring him out of drop coverage because Jamal Murray's just going to carve him up inside.
Yeah.
So I can understand where it comes from, because the offensive side of things, definitely agree with defensive side of things. I mean, early in the playoffs, it was working, and he kind of just couldn't adjust. So, yeah.
All right. You ready to kick it to the last team we're going to talk about before part two? Which is going to be coming out.
Sure.
Should be coming out soon to you guys. All right. So the last team we're going to talk about today is the Memphis Grizzlies. Offensively, last year, give them a 96 talent-wise. Defensively, give them an 88 talent-wise. You know, Ja Morant's a phenomenal offensive player. Dylan Brooks, pretty solid fourth, third scorer. Jaren Jackson Jr. They had a really good bench offensively. Guys like Tyus Jones, guys like Kyle Anderson. They had a good bench last year. So they got a really good grade offensively. Defensively, they get an 88 because even though Jaren Jackson Jr. is special, Dylan Brooks was a very good defender. Desmond Bane doesn't really defend. Ja Morant doesn't defend. Guys like Tyus Jones and Kyle Anderson don't defend. But when we talk about the coach, Taylor Jenkins, I'd give offensively a 93. He does a really good job with Ja Morant. Gives him a lot of spacing. He understands how to use him very well. He understands how to let him play downhill. He used Desmond Bane extremely well, and he used Jaren Jackson extremely well. He's a good offensive coach. I got to give Taylor Jenkins a lot of respect what he does offensively. Defensively, though, I give him a 78. Again, I've said it multiple times, and I'll say it again. Ja Morant might be the most defensively talented guard in the NBA, but he doesn't defend. All right, and that's Taylor Jenkins' fault. That's the only thing I can say. Look, it's defense is the side of the basketball that the coach touches more of what a player can be on the defensive side of the basketball, because so much of it comes down to coaching, intensity, requirements, teaching, understanding. Offensive talent can overcome coaching, right? But defensive talent can't overcome bad coaching. And, you know, even though Jaren Jackson Jr. has been a phenomenal defender and he does a good job with him, that Ja Morant question mark makes me think that maybe Dylan Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. were just great defensive talents.
And he doesn't really have to do much to develop them, because Ja Morant is a negative defensively, but he in no universe should be. So what do you think about that, Chris?
No, definitely. I definitely like what he was able to do with Desmond Bane. I mean, Desmond Bane had a monster game, had monster games this season, you know, and you like that you found out that the pairing between him and Ja Morant was crazy and was pretty much like almost unstoppable, because they were just scoring from so many different angles. So to be able to really, I mean, it feels like Ja Morant every year takes a step forward, and that's big, especially from coaching wise, because you know it's been drilled in him to kind of just work by the coach and stuff like that, and kind of just kind of learn those offensive sets. So that's big. So I'll definitely give him high points for that. Defensively, I mean, he coached the defensive player of the year, but the Ja Morant question mark is a big thing. So you kind of do, I guess you can kind of be like, well, was this just a carryover, kind of a spillover from their other coaches, and that's why they're so great defensively? Because it doesn't seem like he's really coaching the defense per se. Like, of course he's teaching the stats, but is he really maximizing the talent they have defensively? So I don't think he is.
No, I agree, man. Ja Morant's way too freaky athletic. Way too freaky athletic to not be. In no universe does that man not be a good defender.
Exactly, because he's way too athletic.
Yeah. All right, do you have anything else you want to say before we kick it?
Nope.
Okay. Well, you know, guys, this is going to be part one of a part two series. We're going to be next week, we're going to have the next 16 teams that are on this list here. We're going to talk about head coaches giving us similar information that we went over today. It's going to be really great because, you know, this point of this podcast is to really inform you guys with how good coaching really is in the NBA and how to really view coaches. And I think it'll really help cure a lot of people's inability to see Monty Williams a great coach. Like, we'll explain to you why Monty is undeniably a great coach, right? And a guy like Budenholzer. Mm-hmm. It's just because of great talent, because of winning in a game, and because of winning, people have this perception of the talent on the team. But that's not always equal to the coaching. Sometimes the coach is terrible and bringing it down to a certain level. Sometimes they're phenomenal and they're bringing it up to a certain level. And we're going to break that all down for you guys.
Alrighty. Just want to say thank you guys for listening, for tuning in every week. We've got some great content coming for you. We'll be dropping this episode soon, and then the next one will be dropping within next week. So we'll get a part one, part two of this series. Alright, you got anything you want to say before we close it out?
Nope, I got nothing to say, Chris.
Alright, I'm Chris Muhammad.
I'm Jason Collins.
And we had the basketball. Peace
out.